Adam protests, chuckling. I just cleaned it up a bit.
You live here by yourself? I ask James. He shoves his hands into his pockets and nods.
Benny stays with me a lot, but mostly I'm here alone. I'm lucky, though.
Adam is dropping our bags onto the couch. He runs a hand through his hair, and I watch as the muscles in his back flex, tight, pulled together. I watch as he exhales the tension from his body.
I know why, but I ask anyway.
Why are you lucky?
Because I have a visitor. None of the other kids have visitors.
There are other kids here? I hope I don't look as horrified as I feel. James is nodding so quickly his head is wobbling on his neck.
Oh yeah, this whole street. All the kids are here. I'm the only one with my own room, though.
He gestures around the space.
This is all mine because Adam got it for me, but everyone else has to share. We have school, sort of, and Benny brings me my food packages. Adam says I can play with the other kids, but I can't bring them inside.
He shrugs.
It's okay.
The reality of what he's saying spreads like poison in the pit of my stomach. A street dedicated to orphaned children. I wonder how their parents died. I don't wonder for long. I take inventory of the room and notice a tiny refrigerator and a tiny microwave perched on top, both nestled into a corner. See some cabinets set aside for storage. Adam brought as much stuff as he could. All sorts of canned food and non-perishable items. We both brought our toiletries and multiple sets of clothes. We packed enough to survive for at least a little while. James pulls a tinfoil package out of the fridge and sticks it in the microwave.
Wait, James, don't!
I try to stop him. His eyes are wide, frozen.
What?
The tinfoil, you can't put metal in the microwave.
What's a microwave?
I blink so many times the room spins.
What?
He pulls the lid off the tinfoil container to reveal a small square. It looks like a bouillon cube. He points to the cube and then nods at the microwave.
It's okay. I always put this in the automat. Nothing happens.
It takes the molecular composition of the food and multiplies it.
Adam is standing beside me.
It doesn't add any extra nutritional value, but it makes you feel fuller longer.
And it's cheap,
James says, grinning as he sticks it back in the contraption. It astounds me how much has changed. People have become so desperate they're faking food. I have so many questions I'm liable to burst. Adam squeezes my shoulder gently. He whispers,
"We'll talk later, I promise."
But I'm an encyclopedia with too many blank pages. James falls asleep with his head in Adam's lap. He talked nonstop once he finished his food, telling me all about his sort of school and his sort of friends, and Benny, the elderly lady who takes care of him because,
I think she likes Adam better than me, but she sneaks me sugar sometimes, so it's okay.
Everyone has a curfew. No one but soldiers are allowed outside after sunset. Each soldier armed and instructed to fire at their own discretion.
Some people get more food and stuff than other people,
James said. But that's because the people are sorted based on what they can provide to the reestablishment, and not because they're human beings with the right not to starve to death. My heart cracked a little more with every word he shared with me.
You don't mind that I talk a lot, huh?
He bit down on his bottom lip and studied me. I don't mind at all.
Everyone says I talk a lot, he shrugged. But what am I supposed to do when I have so much to say?
Hey, about that?
Adam interrupted.
You can't tell anyone we're here, okay?
James' mouth stopped mid-movement. He blinked a few times. He stared hard at his brother.
Not even Benny?
No one, Adam said.
For one infinitesimal moment, I saw something that looked like raw understanding flash in his eyes. A 10-year-old who can be trusted absolutely. He nodded again and again.
Okay, you were never here.
Adam brushes back wayward strands of hair from James' forehead. He's looking at his brother's sleeping face as if trying to memorize each brushstroke of an oil painting. I'm staring at him, staring at James. I wonder if he knows he's holding my heart in his hand. I take a shaky breath. Adam looks up and I look down and we're both embarrassed for different reasons. He whispers,
I should probably put him in bed.
But doesn't make an effort to move. James is sound asleep. When was the last time you saw him? I ask, careful to keep my voice down.
About 6 months ago.
A pause.
But I talked to him on the phone a lot.
Smiles a little.
Told him a lot about you.
I flush. Count my fingers to make sure they're all there. Didn't Warner monitor your calls?
Yeah, but Benny has an untraceable line, and I was always careful to keep it to official reporting only. In any case, James has known about you for a long time.
Really? I hate that I have to know, but I can hardly help myself. I'm a tangle of butterflies. He looks up, looks away, locks eyes with me, sighs.
Juliet, I've been searching for you since the day you left.
My eyelashes trip into my eyebrows. My jaw drops into my lap.
I was worried about you,
he says quietly.
I didn't know what they were going to do to you.
Why? I gasp, I swallow, I stumble on words. Why would you possibly care? He leans back against the couch, runs a free hand over his face. Seasons change, stars explode. Someone is walking on the moon.
You know, I still remember the first day you showed up at school.
He laughs a soft, sad laugh.
Maybe I was too young, and maybe I didn't know much about the world, but there was something about you I was immediately drawn to. It's like I just wanted to be near you, like you had this goodness I never found in my life, this sweetness that I never found at home. I just wanted to hear you talk. I wanted you to see me, to smile at me. Every single day I promised myself I would talk to you. I wanted to know you. But every day I was a coward. And one day you just disappeared. I heard the rumors, but I knew better. I knew you'd never hurt anyone.
He looks down. The earth cracks open and I'm falling into the fissure.
It sounds crazy.
He says, finally, so quietly.
To think that I cared so much without ever talking to you.
He hesitates.
But I couldn't stop thinking about you. I couldn't stop wondering where you went, what would happen to you. I was afraid you'd never fight back.
He's silent for so long, I want to bite through my tongue.
I had to find you.
He whispers.
I asked around everywhere and no one had answers. The world kept falling apart. Things were getting worse and I didn't know what to do. I had to take care of James and I had to find a way to live and I didn't know if joining the army would help, but I never forgot about you. I always hoped.
He falters.
That one day I would see you again.
I've run out of words. My pockets are full of letters I can't string together, and I'm so desperate to say something that I say nothing, and my heart is about to burst through my chest.
Juliet.
You found me. 3 syllables, 1 whisper of astonishment.
Are you upset?
I look up, and for the first time I realize he's nervous, worried. uncertain how I'll react to this revelation. I don't know whether to laugh or cry or kiss every inch of his body. I want to fall asleep to the sound of his heart beating in the atmosphere. I want to know he's alive and well, breathing in and out, strong and sane and healthy forever. You're the only one who ever cared. My eyes are filling with tears and I'm blinking them back and feeling the burn in my throat. And everything hurts. The weight of the entire day crashes into me, threatens to break my bones. I want to cry out in happiness, in agony, in joy, and the absence of justice. I want to touch the heart of the only person who ever gave a damn. I love you, I whisper. So much more than you will ever know. His eyes are a midnight moment, filled with memories, the only windows into my world. His jaw is tight. His mouth is tight. He looks up and tries to clear his throat, and I know he needs a moment to pull himself together. I tell him he should probably put James in bed. He nods, cradles his brother to his chest, gets to his feet, and carries James to the storage closet that's become his bedroom. I watch him walk away with the only family he has left, and I know why Adam joined the army. I know why he suffered through being Warner's whipping boy. I know why he dealt with the horrifying reality of war, why he was so desperate to run away, so ready to run away as soon as possible, why he's so determined to fight back. He's fighting for so much more than himself. Chapter 33.
Why don't I take a look at those cuts?
Adam is standing in front of James' door, his hands tucked into his pockets. He's wearing a dark red t-shirt that hugs his torso. His arms are expertly chiseled, professionally painted with tattoos I now know how to recognize. He catches me staring.
I didn't really have a choice, he says,
now examining the consecutive black bands of ink etched into his forearms.
We had to survive. It was the only job I could get.
I meet him across the room, touch the designs on his skin, nod. I understand. He almost laughs, nearly smiles, shakes his head just a millimeter. What? I jerk my hand away.
Nothing.
He grins, slips his arms around my waist.
It just keeps hitting me. You're really here. In my house.
Heat rushes up my neck and I fall off a ladder, holding a paintbrush dipped in red. Compliments are not things I know how to process. I bite my lip. Where'd you get your tattoo from?
These?
He looks at his arms again. No. I reach for his shirt, tugging it up so unsuccessfully he nearly loses his balance. He stumbles back against the wall. I push the material up toward his collar, fight back a blush, touch his chest, touch the bird. Where'd you get this from?
Oh.
He's looking at me, but I'm suddenly distracted by the beauty of his body, and the cargo pants sit a little too low on his hips. I realize he must have taken his belt off. I force my eyes upward. Allow my fingers to fumble down his abs. He takes a tight breath.
I don't know,
he says.
I kept dreaming about this white bird. Birds used to fly, you know.
You used to dream about it?
Yeah, all the time.
He smiles a little, exhales a little, remembering.
It was nice. It felt good, hopeful. I wanted to hold on to that memory because I wasn't sure it would last, so I made it permanent.
I cover the tattoo with the palm of my hand. I used to dream about this bird all the time.
This bird?
His eyebrows could touch the sky. I nod, This exact one. Something like realization slides into place. Until the day you showed up in my cell. I haven't dreamt of it ever since. I peek up at him.
You're kidding.
But he knows I'm not. I drop his shirt and lean my forehead on his chest, breathe in the scent of him. He wastes no time pulling me closer, rests his chin on my head, his hands on my back. And we stand like that until I'm too old to remember a world without his warmth. Adam cleans my cuts in a bathroom set a little off to the side of the space. It's a miniature room with a toilet, a sink, a small mirror, and a tiny shower. I love all of it. By the time I get out of the bathroom, finally changed and washed up for bed, Adam is waiting for me in the dark. There are blankets and pillows laid out on the floor, and it looks like heaven. I'm so exhausted I could sleep through a few centuries. I slip in beside him and he scoops me into his arms. The temperature is significantly lower in this place and Adam is the perfect furnace. I bury my face in his chest and he pulls me tight. I trail my fingers down his naked back, feel the muscles tense under my touch. I rest my hand on the waist of his pants, hook my finger into a belt loop, test the taste of the words on my tongue. I meant it, you know. His breath is a beat too late. His heart just a beat too fast.
Meant what?
Though he knows exactly what I mean. I feel so shy so suddenly, so blind, so unnecessarily bold. I know nothing about what I'm venturing into. All I know is I don't want anyone's hands on me but his. Forever. Adam leans back and I can just make out the outline of his face, his eyes always shining in the darkness. I stare at his lips when I speak. I've never asked you to stop. My fingers rest on the button holding his pants together. Not once. He's staring at me, his chest rising and falling a few times a second. He seems almost numb with disbelief. I lean into his ear. Touch me. And he's nearly undone. My face is in his hands and my lips are at his lips. And he's kissing me and I'm oxygen and he's dying to breathe. His body is almost on top of mine, one hand in my hair, the other feeling its way down my silhouette, slipping behind my knee to pull me closer, higher, tighter. He drops kisses down my throat like ecstasy, electric energy searing into me, setting me on fire. I'm on the verge of combusting from the sheer thrill of every moment. I want to dive into his being, experience him with all five senses, drown in the waves of wonder enveloping my existence. I want to taste the landscape of his body. He takes my hands and presses them against his chest, guides my fingers as they trail down the length of his torso before his lips meet mine again and again and again, drugging me into a delirium I never want to escape. But it's not enough. It's still not enough. I want to melt into him. Trace the form of his figure with my lips alone. My heart is racing through my blood, destroying my self-control, spinning everything into a cyclone of intensity. He breaks for air, and I pull him back, aching, desperate, dying for his touch. His hands slip up under my shirt, skirting my sides, touching me like he's never dared to before. And my top is nearly over my head when a door squeaks open. We both freeze.
Adam?
He can hardly breathe. He tries to lower himself onto the pillow beside me, but I can still feel his heat, his figure, his heart pounding in my ears. I'm swallowing back a million screams. Adam leans his head up just a little, tries to sound normal.
James?
Can I come sleep out here with you?
Adam sits up. He's breathing hard, but he's suddenly alert.
Of course you can.
A pause. His voice slows, softens.
You have bad dreams?
James doesn't answer. Adam is on his feet. I hear the muffled hiccup of 10-year-old tears, but can barely distinguish the outline of Adam's body holding James together.
I thought you said it was getting better.
I hear him whisper, but his words are kind, not accusing. James says something I can't hear. Adam picks him up, and I realize how tiny James seems in comparison. They disappear into the bedroom only to return with bedding. Only once James is tucked securely in place a few feet from Adam does he finally give in to exhaustion. His heavy breathing is the only sound in the room. Adam turns to me. I've been a slice of silence, struck, shocked, cut deep by this reminder. I have no idea what James has witnessed at such a tender age. I have no idea what Adam has had to endure in leaving him behind. I have no idea how people live anymore, how they survive. I don't know what's become of my parents. Adam brushes my cheek, slips me into his arms, says,
I'm sorry.
And I kiss the apology away. When the time is right, I tell him. He swallows, leans into my neck, inhales. His hands are under my shirt, up my back. I bite back a gasp. Soon. Chapter 34. Adam and I forced ourselves 5 feet apart last night, but somehow I wake up in his arms. He's breathing softly, evenly, steadily, a warm hum in the morning air. I blink, peering into the daylight, only to be met by a set of big blue eyes on a 10-year-old's face.
How come you can touch him?
James is standing over us with his arms crossed, back to the stubborn boy I remember. There's no trace of fear, no hint of tears threatening to spill down his face. It's like last night never happened.
Well?
His impatience startles me. I jump away from Adam's uncovered upper half so quickly it jolts him awake. A little. He reaches for me.
Juliet?
You're touching a girl!
Adam sits up so quickly he tangles in the sheets and falls back on his elbows.
Jesus, James!
You were sleeping next to a girl!
Adam opens and closes his mouth several times. He glances at me, glances at his brother, shuts his eyes and finally sighs, runs a hand through his morning hair.
I don't know what you want me to say.
I thought you said she couldn't touch anyone.
James is staring at me now, suspicious.
She can't.
Except for you?
Right, except for me.
And Warner.
She can't touch anyone except for you.
And Warner.
Right.
That seems awfully convenient.
James narrows his eyes. Adam laughs out loud.
Where'd you learn to talk like that?
James frowns.
Benny says that a lot. She says my excuses are awfully convenient.
He makes air quotes with two fingers.
She says it means, I don't believe you. And I don't believe you.
Adam gets to his feet. The early morning light filters through the small windows at the perfect angle, the perfect moment. He's bathed in gold, his muscles taut, his pants still a little low on his hips, and I have to force myself to think straight. I'm shocked by my own lack of self-control, but I'm not sure I know how to contain these feelings. Adam makes me hungry for things I never knew I could have. I watch as he drapes an arm over his brother's shoulders before squatting down to meet his gaze.
Can I talk to you about something?
He says.
Privately?
Just me and you?
James glances at me out of the corner of his eye.
Yeah, just me and you.
Okay.
I watch the two of them disappear into James' room, and I wonder what Adam is going to tell him. It takes me a moment to realize James must feel threatened by my sudden appearance. He finally sees his brother after nearly 6 months, only to have him come home with a strange girl with crazy magical powers. I nearly laugh at the idea. If only it were magic that made me this way. I don't want James to think I'm taking Adam away from him. I slip back under the covers and wait. The morning is cool and brisk, and my thoughts begin to wander to Warner. I need to remember that we're not safe. Not yet. Maybe not ever. I need to remember never to get too comfortable. I sit up, pull my knees to my chest, and wrap my arms around my ankles. I wonder if Adam has a plan. James' door squeaks open. The two brothers step out, the younger before the older. James looks a little pink, and he can hardly meet my eyes. He looks embarrassed, and I wonder if Adam punished him. My heart fails for a moment. Adam claps James on the shoulder, squeezes.
You okay?
I know what a girlfriend is.
I never said you didn't.
So you're his girlfriend?
James crosses his arms, looks at me. There are 400 cotton balls caught in my windpipe. I look at Adam because I don't know what else to do.
Hey, maybe you should be getting ready for school, huh?
Adam opens the refrigerator and hands James a new foil package. I assume it's his breakfast.
I don't have to go, James protests. It's not like a real school. No one has to.
I want you to.
Adam cuts him off. He turns back to his brother with a small smile.
Don't worry. I'll be here when you get back.
James hesitates.
You promise?
Yeah.
Another grin. Nods him over.
Come here.
James runs forward and clings to Adam like he's afraid he'll disappear. Adam pops the foil food into the automat and presses a button. He musses James' hair.
You need to get a haircut, kid.
James wrinkles his nose.
I like it.
It's a little long, don't you think?
James lowers his voice.
I think her hair is really long.
James and Adam glance back at me and I melt into pink Play-Doh. I touch my hair without intending to, suddenly self-conscious. I look down. I've never had a reason to cut my hair. I've never even had the tools. No one offers me sharp objects. I chance a peek and see Adam is still staring at me. James is staring at the automat.
I like her hair,
Adam says. And I'm not sure who he's talking to. I watch the two of them as Adam helps his brother get ready for school. James is so full of life, so full of energy, so excited to have his brother around. It makes me wonder what it must be like for a 10-year-old to live on his own, what it must be like for all the kids who live on this street. I'm itching to get up and change, but I'm not sure what I should do. I don't want to take up the bathroom in case James needs it, or if Adam needs it. I don't want to take up any more space than I already have. It feels so private, so personal, this relationship between Adam and James. It's the kind of bond I've never had, will never have. But being around so much love has managed to thaw my frozen parts into something human. I feel human. Like maybe I could be a part of this world. Like maybe I don't have to be a monster. Maybe I'm not a monster. Maybe things can change. Chapter 35. James is at school, Adam is in the shower, and I'm staring at a bowl of granola Adam left for me to eat. It feels so wrong to be eating this food when James has to eat the unidentifiable substance in the foil container.
But Adam says James is allocated a certain portion for every meal, and he's required to eat it by law. If he's found wasting it or discarding it, he could be punished. All the orphans are expected to eat the foil food that goes in their automat. James claims it doesn't taste too bad. I shiver slightly in the cool morning air and smooth a hand over my hair, still damp from the shower. The water here isn't hot. It isn't even warm. It's freezing. Warm water is a luxury. Someone is pounding on the door. I'm up, spinning, scanning, scared. They've found us is the only thing I can think of. My stomach is a flimsy crepe, my heart a raging woodpecker, my blood a river of anxiety. Adam is in the shower, James is at school. I'm absolutely defenseless. I rummage through Adam's duffel bag until I find what I'm looking for. 2 guns, 1 for each hand. 2 hands, just in case the guns fail. I'm finally wearing the kind of clothes that would be comfortable to fight in. I take a deep breath and beg my hands not to shake. The pounding gets harder. I point the guns at the door.
Juliet?
I spin back to see Adam staring at me. The guns, the door. His hair is wet. His eyes are wide. He nods toward the extra gun in my hand and I toss it to him without a word.
If it were Warner, he wouldn't be knocking,
he says, though he doesn't lower his weapon. I know he's right. Warner would have shot down the door, used explosives, killed 100 people to get to me. He certainly wouldn't wait for me to open the door. Something calms inside of me, but I won't allow myself to get comfortable. Who do you think?
It might be Benny. She usually checks up on James.
But wouldn't she know he'd be at school right now?
No one else knows where I live.
The pounding is getting weaker, slower. There's a low, guttural sound of agony. Adam and I lock eyes. 1 more fist flailing into the door. A slump. Another moan. The thud of a body against the door. I flinch. Adam rakes a hand through his hair.
Adam!
Someone cries. Coughs.
Please, man. If you're in there.
I freeze. The voice sounds familiar. Adam's spine straightens in an instant. His lips are parted, his eyes astonished. He punches in the passcode and turns the latch, points his gun toward the door as he eases it open.
Kenji?
A short wheeze, a muffled groan.
Oh, shit, man. What took you so long?
What the hell are you doing here?
Click. I can hardly see through the small slit of the door, but it's clear Adam isn't happy to have company.
Who sent you here? Who are you with?
Kenji swears a few more times under his breath.
Look at me,
he demands, though it sounds more like a plea.
You think I came up here to kill you?
Adam pauses, breathes, doubts.
I have no problem putting a bullet in your back.
Oh, don't worry, bro. I already have a bullet in my back. Or my leg or some shit. I don't even know.
Adam opens the door.
Get up.
It's all right. I don't mind if you drag my ass inside.
Adam works his jaw.
I don't want your blood on my carpet. It's not something my brother needs to see.
Kenji stumbles up and staggers into the room. I'd heard his voice once before, but never seen his face. Though this probably isn't the best time for first impressions. His eyes are puffy, swollen, purple. There's a huge gash in the side of his forehead. His lip is split, slightly bleeding. His body slumped and broken. He winces, takes short breaths as he moves. His clothes are ripped to shreds, his upper body covered by nothing but a tank top. His well-developed arms cut and bruised. I'm amazed he didn't freeze to death. He doesn't seem to notice me until he does. He stops, blinks, breaks into a ridiculous smile dimmed only by a slight grimace from the pain.
Holy shit,
he says, still drinking me in.
Holy shit.
He tries to laugh.
Dude, you're insane.
The bathroom is over here.
Adam is set in stone. Kenji moves forward but keeps looking back. I point the gun at his face. He laughs harder, flinches, wheezes a bit.
Dude, you ran off with the crazy chick? You ran off with the psycho girl? He's calling after Adam. I thought they made that shit up. What the hell were you thinking? What are you going to do with a psycho chick? No wonder Warner wants you dead. Oh, man, what the hell?
She's not crazy. And she's not deaf, asshole.
The door slams shut behind them, and I can only make out their muffled argument. I have a feeling Adam doesn't want me to hear what he has to say to Kenji. Either that, or it's the screaming. I have no idea what Adam is doing, but I assume it has something to do with dislodging a bullet from Kenji's body, and generally repairing the rest of his wounds as best he can. Adam has a pretty extensive first aid supply and strong, steady hands. I wonder if he picked up these skills in the army. Maybe for taking care of himself, or maybe his brother. It would make sense. Health insurance was a dream we lost a long time ago. I've been holding this gun in my hand for nearly an hour. I've been listening to Kenji scream for nearly an hour, and I only know that because I like counting the seconds as they pass by. I have no idea what time it is. I think there's a clock in James's bedroom, but I don't want to go into his room without permission. I stare at the gun in my hand, at the smooth, heavy metal, and I'm surprised to find that I enjoy the way it feels in my grip, like an extension of my body. It doesn't frighten me anymore. It frightens me more that I might use it. The bathroom door opens and Adam walks out. He has a small towel in his hands. I get to my feet. He offers me a small smile. He reaches into the tiny fridge for the even tinier freezer section, grabs a couple of ice cubes and drops them into the towel, disappears into the bathroom again. I sit back on the couch. It's raining today. The sky is weeping for us. Adam comes out of the bathroom, this time empty-handed, still alone. I stand back up. He rubs his forehead, the back of his neck, meets me on the couch.
I'm sorry,
he says. My eyes are wide. For what?
Everything,
he sighs.
Kenji was a sort of friend of mine back on base. Warner had him tortured after we left, for information.
I swallow a gasp.
He says he didn't say anything. Didn't have anything to say, really, but he got messed up pretty bad. I have no idea if his ribs are broken or just bruised, but I managed to get the bullet out of his leg.
I take his hand. Squeeze.
He got shot running away,
Adam says after a moment. And something slams into my consciousness. I panic. The tracker serum. Adam nods, his eyes heavy, distraught.
I think it might be dysfunctional, but I have no way of knowing for sure. I do know that if it were working as it should, Warner would be here by now. But we can't risk it. We have to get out, and we have to get rid of Kenji before we go.
I'm shaking my head, caught between colliding currents of disbelief. How did he even find you? Adam's face hardens.
He started screaming before I could ask.
And James? I whisper, almost afraid to wonder. Adam drops his head into his hands.
As soon as he gets home, we have to go. We can use this time to prepare.
He meets my eyes.
I can't leave James behind. It's not safe for him here anymore.
I touch his cheek and he leans into my hand, holds my palm against his face, closes his eyes.
Son of a motherless goat.
Adam and I break apart. I'm blushing past my hairline. Adam looks annoyed. Kenji is leaning against the wall in the bathroom hallway, holding the makeshift ice pack to his face, staring at us.
You can touch her? I mean, shit, I just saw you touch her, but that's not even...
You have to go,
Adam says to him.
You've already left a chemical trace leading right to my home. We need to leave, and you can't come with us.
Oh, hey, whoa, hold on.
Kenji stumbles into the living room, wincing as he puts pressure on his leg.
I'm not trying to slow you down, man. I know a place. A safe place. Like a legit super safe place. I can take you. I can show you how to get there. I know a guy. Bullshit.
Adam is still angry.
How did you even find me? How did you manage to show up at my door, Kenji? I don't trust you.
I don't know, man. I swear, I don't remember what happened. I don't know where I was running after a certain point. I was just jumping fences. I found a huge field with an old shed, slept in there for a while. I think I blacked out at one point, either from the pain or from the cold. It is cold as hell out here. And the next thing I know, some dude is carrying me. Drops me off at your door, tells me to shut up about Adam because Adam lives right here. He grins, tries to wink. I guess I was dreaming about you in my sleep.
Wait, what?
Adam leans forward.
What do you mean some guy was carrying you? What guy? What was his name? How did he know my name?
I don't know. He didn't tell me. And it's not like I had the presence of mind to ask. But dude was huge. I mean, he had to be if he was going to lug my ass around.
You can't honestly expect me to believe you.
You have no choice. Kenji shrugs.
Of course I have a choice.
Adam is on his feet.
I have no reason to trust you. No reason to believe a word that's coming out of your mouth.
Then why am I here with a bullet in my leg? Why hasn't Warner found you yet? Why am I unarmed?
This could be part of your plan.
And you helped me anyway.
Kenji dares to raise his voice.
Why didn't you just let me die? Why didn't you shoot me dead? Why did you help me?
Adam falters.
I don't know.
You do know. You know I'm not here to mess you up. I took a goddamn beating for you.
You weren't protecting any information of mine.
Well, shit, man. What the hell do you want me to say? They were going to kill my ass. I had to run. It wasn't my fault some dude dropped me off at your door.
This isn't just about me. Don't you understand? I've worked so hard to find a safe place for my brother, and in one morning you ruined years of planning. What the hell am I supposed to do now? I have to run until I can find a way to keep him safe. He's too young to have to deal with this. We're all too young to have to deal with this shit.
Kenji is breathing hard.
Don't fool yourself, bro. No one should have to see what we've seen. No one should have to wake up in the morning and find dead bodies in their living room, but shit happens. We deal with it, and we find a way to survive. You're not the only one with problems.
Adam sinks into the sofa. 80 pounds of worry weigh down his shoulders. He leans forward with his head in his hands. Kenji stares at me. I stare back. He grins and hobbles forward.
You know, you're pretty sexy for a psycho chick.
Click. Kenji is backing up with his hands in the air. Adam is pressing a gun to his forehead.
Show some respect or I will burn it into your skull.
I was kidding.
Like hell you were.
Damn, Adam, calm the hell down.
Where's this super safe place you can take us? I'm up, gun still gripped in my hand. I move into position next to Adam. Or are you making that up? Kenji lights up.
No, that's real. Very real. In fact, I may or may not have mentioned something about you. And the dude who runs the place may or may not be ridiculously interested in meeting you.
You think I'm some kind of freak you can show off to your friends? Locked, loaded. Kenji clears his throat.
Not a freak, just... interesting.
I point my gun at his nose. I'm so interesting I can kill you with my bare hands. A barely perceptible flash of fear flickers in his eyes. He swallows a few gallons of humility, tries to smile.
You sure you're not crazy?
No, I cock my head. I'm not sure. Kenji grins, looks me up and down.
Well, damn. But you make crazy sound so good. I'm about 5 inches from breaking your face.
Adam warns him. His voice like steel, his body stiff with anger, his eyes narrowed, unflinching. There's no hint of humor in his expression.
I don't need another reason.
What?
Kenji laughs, undeterred. I haven't been this close to a chick in way too long, bro. And crazy or not, I'm not interested. Kenji turns to face me.
Well, I'm not sure I blame you. I look like hell right now, but I clean up okay.
He attempts a grin.
Give me a couple days, you might change your mind.
Adam elbows him in the face and doesn't apologize. Chapter 36. Kenji is swearing, bleeding, running out of expletives and tripping his way toward the bathroom, holding his nose together. Adam pulls me into James's bedroom.
Tell me something,
he says. He stares up at the ceiling, takes a hard breath.
Tell me anything.
I try to focus his eyes, grasp his hands, gentle, gentle, gentle. I wait until he's looking at me. Nothing is going to happen to James. We'll keep him safe, I promise. His eyes are full of pain like I've never seen them before. He parts his lips, presses them together, changes his mind a million times until his words tumble through the air between us.
He doesn't even know about our dad.
It's the first time he's acknowledged the issue. It's the first time he's acknowledged that I know anything about it.
I never wanted him to know. I made up stories for him. I wanted him to have a chance to be normal.
His lips are spelling secrets, and my ears are spilling ink, staining my skin with his stories.
I don't want anyone to touch him. I don't want to screw him up. I can't. God, I can't let it happen,
he says to me. Hushed, quiet. I've searched the world for all the right words, and my mouth is full of nothing.
It's never enough,
he whispers.
I can never do enough. He still wakes up screaming. He still cries himself to sleep. He sees things I can't control.
He blinks a million times.
So many people, Juliet.
I hold my breath.
Dead.
I touch the word on his lips and he kisses my fingers. His eyes are two pools of perfection, open, honest, humble.
I don't know what to do,
he says, and it's like a confession that costs him so much more than I can understand. Control is slipping through his fingers and he's desperate to hold on.
Tell me what to do.
I can hear our heartbeats in the silence between us. I study the shape of his lips, the strong lines of his face, the eyelashes any girl would kill for, the deep, dark blue of the eyes I've learned to swim in. I offer him the only possibility I have. Kenji's plan might be worth considering.
You trust him?
Adam leans back, surprised. I don't think he's lying about knowing a place we can go.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Why not? Something that might not be a laugh.
I might kill him before we even get there.
My lips twist into a sad smile. There isn't any other place for us to hide, is there? The sun is revolving around the moon when he responds. He shakes his head. Once, fast, tight. I squeeze his hand. Then we have to try.
What the hell are you doing in there?
Kenzie shouts through the door, pounds it a couple times.
I mean, shit, man, I don't think there's ever a bad time to get naked, but now is probably not the best time for a nooner. So unless you want to get killed, I suggest you get your ass out here. We have to get ready to go.
I might kill him right now.
Adam changes his mind. I take his face in my hands, tip up on my toes and kiss him. His lips are two pillows, so soft, so sweet. I love you. He's looking into my eyes and looking at my mouth, and his voice is a husky whisper.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The three of us are packed and ready to go before James comes home from school. Adam and I collected the most important basic necessities, food, clothes, money Adam saved up. He keeps looking around the small space like he can't believe he's lost it so easily. I can only imagine how much work he put into it, how hard he tried to make a home for his little brother. My heart is in pieces for him. His friend is an entirely different species. Kenji is nursing new bruises, but seems in reasonable spirits, excited for reasons I can't fathom. He's oddly resilient and upbeat. It seems impossible to discourage him, and I can't help but admire his determination. But he won't stop staring at me.
"So how come you can touch Adam?"
he says after a moment. "I don't know." He snorts.
"Bull."
I shrug. I don't feel the need to convince him that I have absolutely no idea how I got so lucky.
"How'd you even know you could touch him? Some kind of sick experiment?"
I hope I'm not blushing. "Where's this place you're taking us?"
"Why are you changing the subject?"
He's grinning. I'm sure he's grinning. I refuse to look at him, though.
"Maybe you can touch me, too? Why don't you try?"
"You don't want me to touch you."
"Maybe I do."
He's definitely grinning.
"Maybe you should leave her alone before I put that bullet back in your leg,"
Adam offers.
"I'm sorry. Is a lonely man not allowed to make a move, Kent? Maybe I'm actually interested. Maybe you should back the hell off and let her speak for herself."
Adam runs a hand through his hair. Always the same hand. Always through his hair. He's flustered, frustrated, maybe even embarrassed. "I'm still not interested," I remind him, an edge to my voice.
"Yes, but let's not forget that this,"
he motions to his battered face,
"is not permanent."
"Well, I'm permanently uninterested. I want so badly to tell him that I'm unavailable. I want to tell him that I'm in a serious relationship. I want to tell him that Adam's made me promises. But I can't. I have no idea what it means to be in a relationship. I don't know if saying I love you is code for mutually exclusive. And I don't know if Adam was serious when he told James I was his girlfriend. Maybe it was an excuse, a cover, an easy answer to an otherwise complicated question. I wish he would say something to Kenji. I wish he would tell him that we're officially together, exclusively. But he doesn't. And I don't know why.
"I don't think you should decide until the swelling goes down,"
Kenji continues, matter-of-factly.
"It's only fair. I have a pretty spectacular face."
Adam chokes on a cough that I think was a laugh.
"You know, I could have sworn we used to be cool,"
Kenji says, leveling his gaze at Adam.
"I can't remember why."
Kenji bristles.
"Is there something you want to say to me?"
"I don't trust you."
"Then why am I still here?"
"Because I trust her."
Kenji turns to look at me. He manages a goofy smile.
"Aw, you trust me?"
"As long as I have a clear shot." I tighten my hold on the gun in my hand. His grin is crooked.
"I don't know why, but I kinda like it when you threaten me."
"That's because you're an idiot."
"Nah."
He shakes his head.
"You got a sexy voice. Makes everything sound naughty."
Adam stands up so suddenly he nearly knocks over the coffee table. Kenji bursts out laughing, wheezing against the pain of his injuries.
"Oh, calm down, Kent, damn. I'm just messing with you guys. I like seeing Psycho Chick get all intense."
He glances at me, lowers his voice.
"I mean that as a compliment because, you know..."
He waves a haphazard hand in my direction.
"Psycho kinda works for you." "What the hell is wrong with you?"
Adam turns on him.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
Kenji crosses his arms, annoyed.
"Everyone is so uptight in here."
Adam squeezes the gun in his hand, walks to the door, walks back. He's pacing.
"And don't worry about your brother," Kenji adds. "I'm sure he'll be here soon."
Adam doesn't laugh. He doesn't stop pacing. His jaw twitches.
"I'm not worried about my brother. I'm trying to decide whether to shoot you now or later."
"Later,"
Kenji says, collapsing onto the couch.
"You still need me right now."
Adam tries to speak, but he's out of time. The door clicks, beeps, unlatches open. James is home. Chapter 37.
I'm really happy you're taking it so well. I am. But James, this really isn't something to be excited about. We're running for our lives.
But we're doing it together,
he says for the fifth time, a huge grin overcrowding his face. He took a liking to Kenji almost too quickly, and now the pair of them are conspiring to turn our predicament into some kind of elaborate mission.
And I can help!
No, it's not.
Of course you can.
Adam and Kenji speak at the same time. Kenji recovers first.
Why can't he help? 10 years old is old enough to help.
That's not your call,
Adam says, careful to control his voice. I know he's staying calm for his brother's sake.
And it's none of your business.
I finally get to come with you, James says, undeterred. And I want to help.
James took the news in stride. He didn't even flinch when Adam explained the real reason why he was home and why we were together. I thought seeing Kenji's bruised and battered face would scare him, unnerve him, instill a sense of fear in his heart, but James was eerily unmoved. It occurred to me that he must have seen much worse. Adam takes a few deep breaths before turning to Kenji.
How far?
By foot?
Kenji looks uncertain for the first time.
At least a few hours. If we don't do anything stupid, we should be there by nightfall.
And if we take a car?
Kenji blinks. His surprise dissolves into an enormous grin.
Well, shit, Ken. Why didn't you say so sooner?
Watch your mouth around my brother.
James rolls his eyes.
I hear worse stuff than that every day. Even Benny uses bad words.
Benny?
Adam's eyebrows stumble up his forehead.
Yep.
What does she...
He stops, changes his mind.
That doesn't mean it's okay for you to keep hearing it.
I'm almost 11!
Hey, little man,
Kenji interrupts. It's okay.
It's my fault. I should be more careful. Besides, there are ladies present.
Kenji winks at me. I look away, look around. It's difficult for me to leave this humble home, so I can only imagine what Adam must be experiencing right now. I think James is too excited about the dangerous road ahead of us to realize what's happening, to truly understand that he'll never be coming back here. We're all fugitives running for our lives.
So what? You stole a car?
Kenji asks.
A tank.
Kenji barks out a laugh.
Oh, nice!
It's a little conspicuous for daytime, though.
What's conspicuous mean?
James asks.
It's a little too noticeable.
Adam cringes.
Shit!
Kenji stumbles up to his feet.
I told you to watch your mouth.
Do you hear that?
Hear what?
Kenji's eyes are darting in every direction.
Is there another way out of here?
Adam is up.
James?
James runs to his brother's side. Adam checks his gun. I'm slinging bags over my back. Adam is doing the same, his attention diverted by the front door.
Hurry!
How close?
There's no time!
What are you-
Kent, run!
And we're running, following Adam into James's room. Adam rips a curtain off one wall to reveal a hidden door just as three beeps sound from the living room. Adam shoots the lock on the exit door. Something explodes, not 15 feet behind us. The sound shatters in my ear, vibrates through my body. I nearly collapse from the impact. Gunshots are everywhere. Footsteps are pounding into the house, but we're already running through the exit. Adam hauls James up and into his arms, and we're flying through the sudden burst of light blinding our way through the streets. The rain has stopped. The roads are slick and muddy. There are children everywhere, bright colors of small bodies suddenly screaming at our approach. There's no point being inconspicuous anymore. They've already found us. Kenji is lagging behind, stumbling his way through the last of his adrenaline rush. We turn into a narrow alleyway and he slumps against the wall.
I'm sorry, he pants. I can't. You can leave me.
We can't leave you,
Adam shouts, looking everywhere, drinking in our surroundings.
Ah, that's sweet, bro, but it's okay.
We need you to show us where to go.
Well, shit!
You said you would help us.
I thought you said you had a tank.
If you hadn't noticed, there's been an unexpected change of plans.
I can't keep up, Kent. I can barely walk.
You have to try.
There are rebels on the loose. They are armed and ready to fire. Curfew is now in effect.